May it please the court, counsel. I am Edward Hearn of Johnson & Bell from Merrillville, Indiana, on behalf of Nicole and Wesley Kozuzic, the plaintiffs below and appellants here. It is our position, Your Honors, that there were two errors in the opinion of the trial court which would require reversal of the summary judgment. The first is that the trial court required that the plaintiffs prove that the outcome of the election, which was at issue in this case, was in doubt in order to bring a 42 U.S.C. 1983 claim based upon what the plaintiffs allege, and we believe the evidence supported, was an intentional act by the defendants to challenge and cause the plaintiffs' votes not to be counted in that election. This court's Bodine versus Elkhart County Election Board case was cited by the parties and the court and stands for the proposition that if you have an event that undermines the organic process of an election that results in fundamental unfairness, that that gives rise to a 1983 claim. Now, in that case, that was a suit that was brought by candidates challenging the process of the conduction of the election. But the rule still applies to a case such as this, where the voters are claiming that some conduct took place which caused their ballots intentionally and wrongfully to be spoiled and not counted. And that's what occurred in this particular case. The defendants really do not argue with our proposition that this was an incorrect application of 1983 in requiring us to prove that the outcome of the election was in doubt. And so that is our first basis for the position that the opinion of the trial court was erroneous and should be reversed. The second is simply that we believe, with all due respect, that the district court judge resolved the inferences in this factually sensitive case involving the intent of the defendants in favor of the moving party. We designated what we believe was evidence that supported the proposition that Ms. Brewer, who was the county clerk and also the secretary of the election board, had information in her possession several days, approximately a week before the election, which she knew at the time she could use to challenge the residency of the plaintiff's attempt to vote in the 2003 general election, that she did nothing with that information, knowing that she could have done something, taken the matter, for instance, to the county election board and brought the challenge before the election so that my clients, the plaintiffs, could have been heard and made their argument that they resided in Porter, not in Chesterton. And specifically, we cited the fact that when Ms. Brewer was asked about this on two different occasions, first in 2004, in a deposition proceeding that took place when the county election board was conducting an investigation after the election, she indicated that she was suspicious upon being provided with this information by Mr. Nelson a week before the election. When her deposition was taken in the case in 2006, 2 years later, she said that she was not suspicious until she saw Mr. Kozuzic at the Chesterton polling location where he was working as a poll worker. Additionally, Ms. Brewer admitted that she knew that the issue of residency resolved very heavily on intent. She knew that before the election. She was a sophisticated individual, but being the clerk of the court and a member of the election board. And she had three pieces of information in her possession regarding the residency of these voters and only provided one piece of information to the county polling inspector who had to make the decision about whether or not to spoil the plaintiff's votes. And that was the piece of information that supported her challenge. She had two other pieces of information that did not support her challenge, and she did not provide that information to the polling inspector, and she knew that those pieces of information were important. Now, all of this we cited to the district court as...
What were the other pieces of information?
There were three pieces of information. One was that Mr. Kazuzic was listed on a claim form which was present at this training session that took place a week before the election that Chief Nelson saw, and that listed, and it was an official claim form, which meant that Mr. Kazuzic filled this out and indicated that that was his residence, where he asked that that his check from the county come for working on the day of the election. That was the first piece. That supported his residency being in Porter, where he was registered to vote. She did not provide that to the polling inspector. The second piece of information was this conversation that Ms. Brewer had with Mr. Kazuzic on the day of the election, where she said, "How do you like living in Chesterton?" And his response was, and this part is undisputed, he said, "I only stay in Chesterton sometimes." Now, Mr. Kazuzic goes on and disputes further what took place in that conversation. But again, this is another piece of information that Ms. Brewer had that supported residency in Porter, and she did not give that information to the polling inspector. And when she was asked about this in her deposition, she really had no explanation other than the fact that she indicates that she had an official police report from the Chesterton Police Department, and that that was the basis of her claim. The problem with that is she had an official document from the County Election Board which indicates Porter. So that really sort of flies in the face.
How would she know, what would have told her that it was her duty as someone challenging a ballot to produce all the information, both the sort of the inculpatory and the exculpatory information?
Well, I'm not sure she had a duty, Judge, and this sort of maybe goes on to the issue.
So then how would you formulate the constitutional claim that your client's making?
Well, I think it's this point. If she knows that she has information that is important and she intentionally withholds it, knowing that the polling inspector ought to have this information in order to make the decision about whether to spoil the ballot, at that point, because she has that information and because she knows that it's important, the fact that she withholds it suggests that she was acting intentionally to attempt to deprive the plaintiffs of their right to vote.
So from a qualified immunity perspective, how would she have known? How was this clearly established that it was her responsibility to provide all the data that she had?
Well, I think she testified that she knew that residency was turned heavily on intent. So she knew, and she said, "I knew that at the time I gave my," she gave her deposition, she knew that on the day of the election, she knew that before the day of the election. So I think with that knowledge that she knows that this information is important, the fact that she doesn't give this information to the polling inspector suggests that she's trying to manipulate the decision of the polling inspector.
So we're just to ignore her statement then that she became suspicious only after she had this encounter with Wesley on Election Day?
I don't think you ignore it, Judge, but I think that's a factual dispute. She says in 2006, by the way, and not in 2004, "I only became suspicious when I talked to Wesley on the day of the election." Mm-hmm. In 2004, when she was asked about that, she said that she got this information from Chief Nelson the week before, and her response was, "Oh, I wasn't quite expecting that. I didn't know what was going to happen next," because, as she explains, she didn't know whether or not a ballot had been cast at that point or was going to be cast at that point. But I don't think you ignore it. I think this is all factual evidence that the jury should resolve and decide whether or not she's being forthright, whether
or
not
that's your best evidence of willfulness, isn't it?
That and the fact that she withholds the information from the polling inspector. Is that what you were referring
yes.
to?
Yes.
I think the fact that she delayed taking any action until the day of the election, coupled with the fact that she withheld that information from the polling inspector that was adverse to her challenge, is the best evidence that she acted intentionally with regard to her challenge.
And the polling inspector makes the decision, correct?
That's true, Judge.
What did Mr. Nelson know about his duties with respect to this vote? All he did was produce the police report, right?
Yeah, I think this is a circumstantial evidence case, and forthrightly, the case against Judge Nelson is not nearly as strong as it is against Chief Nelson. Is not nearly as strong as it is.
Got promoted, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure he would appreciate that.
I think he'd rather a policeman's retirement, though.
He is, and we pointed this out, he is a political appointee of a community located next to Porter. My client's mother was the Democratic president of the town of Porter. Mr. Nelson was appointed by the Republican-controlled town of Chesterton. There was litigation going on between the two towns at that time. Mr. Nelson knew about that, admitted that he knew about that at the time that he provided this information, and he just happens to notice my client's address, happens to remember that there was a police report several months earlier with a different address, and just happens to report this to the Republican clerk of the court.
Most vote challenges are made by people from the opposite party, aren't they?
It could be.
So is that enough to get to the jury?
I don't think so. I think in this case, because of the fact that, if you're asking me about Chief Nelson, I think it's the political connection, the fact that he is appointed by and at odds with the administration in the opposing town, and the fact that my client's mother was the town council president, that gets beyond that. But in this particular case, the evidence with respect to Ms. Brewer is beyond just a challenge is made and, for instance, the challenge is unsupported.
But to get back to Nelson, you really are trying to build a circumstantial case against him because you don't really have any direct evidence of his willful spoiling of the ballots.
Well, I think the entire case is circumstantial. Absent an admission by either of the two of the defendants, the case is circumstantial.
This was an election only for town or city offices, right?
County offices.
That is, it wouldn't make any difference where he lived if it was a county official.
Technically, it would under the state's law. Under the state law, you have to be registered
on the precinct in which.
Yes, sir.
Live, but
yes, technically, it would make a difference. Although
that wouldn't be come to anybody's attention at that point.
Probably not. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jean Anderson, and I'm here on behalf of Dale Brewer, the county clerk for Porter, and George Nelson, the sheriff for Chesterton, Indiana. This case is not about casting an undiluted ballot, about the right to cast an undiluted ballot. The Constitution is not an election fraud statute, and the protection of the right to vote is extended to all qualified voters. In this case, the ambiguity and the contradiction regarding the residency of the plaintiffs for voting purposes was created by the plaintiffs themselves just weeks before the election by their conduct and by their intent. Brewer, the county clerk, was merely performing her functions in ensuring that, as this court recognized in Crawford v. Mannion, that legitimate voters' legitimately casted votes are diluted when fraud is permitted. And she was trying to prevent potential fraud in this case. And fraud in absentee balloting is a recognized problem in Indiana, as also was admitted and acknowledged by the Assistant Attorney General in the Crawford v. Mannion case. Brewer, as clerk, would well have known that a self-serving statement as to intent of residency is insufficient under Indiana law to establish residency. The law is that it's intent. When intent converges with conduct, you establish residency. Plaintiffs in this case have not cited to any Section 1983 case where the individual impairment of the right to vote would be sufficient to state a claim for money damages under Section 1983. And, in fact, the plaintiffs have waived any argument. They agreed, and Judge Lozano wrote his opinion based on their stipulation that the controlling precedent is Bodine. And under Bodine, this Court recognized a very important consideration that's at issue in this case also, and that's federalism concerns. And the federalism concerns caution this Court or any federal court from becoming entangled in a state election matter. This is, Your Honor, basically a garden variety election irregularity challenging an absentee ballot. It's a challenge to an absentee ballot is a state election procedure designed for the speedy and effective resolution of the multitude of questions that arise on election day. And this Court would not want to recognize a Section 1983 claim on these facts, especially where any time a challenge is made by a person from the opposing party, they would be litigating it in federal court for money damages. And as I said, federalism concerns caution courts from doing that. And additionally, under Bodine, as Judge Lozano found, the plaintiffs must prove willfulness, and they must prove that the willfulness undermines the organic processes by which candidates are elected. There was absolutely no showing of willfulness in this case. There were depositions, there were affidavits, there was an election board hearing where testimony was taken. Plaintiffs have pointed this Court to no specific fact to support their conclusion that the defendants were acting intentionally.
Ms. Anderson, on the challenge form, didn't Ms. Brewer note something about 3-0 vote election board or something like that?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's that about?
Well, first of all, the fact that Ms. Brewer contacted the election board officials when she was not obliged to under the law is indicative of the fact that she wasn't intentionally trying to disenfranchise plaintiffs' right
to
vote.
She's one of the three, isn't she?
She's one of the three. So she called the two members, and she said, I have conflicting documentation as to residency. What should I do? And the Democratic member, she was a Republican, and the Democratic member of the election board said, well, if you have conflicting documentation, you should challenge. And she called the other board member, Mr. Bordex, and he also said, if you have conflicting documentation, you should challenge. So she went to the polling place from which the Kazuziks voted from, which was in Porter County, and she went to the poll watcher, Rita Newman, who's not a party to this action. She wasn't named as a defendant. And she indicated that there was a 3-0 vote by the Board of Election that this ballot should be challenged.
Is it undisputed that she said that the conversation between the clerk and the other, the Republican and Democratic member of that board, was that she had conflicting evidence regarding residence? Is that?
I would say that was undisputed. Correct.
So that's what she conveyed to him, which was correct then, right?
Yes, it was. And further, as I alluded to in my brief, the willfulness that plaintiffs allege here just doesn't hold up for several reasons. One, the depositions revealed that although this was a small town and people were aware of other people, the defendants in this case had no personal relationship with these plaintiffs. And this whole conspiracy that plaintiff alleges is circumspect at best because it's dependent on the actions or conduct of a third party, not privy to the conspiracy, to take certain conduct. That is, that their whole conspiracy was contingent on Rita Newman spoiling the ballot, and she was not even alleged to be party to this conspiracy. Furthermore, as I alluded to in my brief, the purpose of this conspiracy does not withstand scrutiny. The alleged purpose of this conspiracy was to affect the outcome of the election. I don't see how that would have happened when the challenge to the vote was made on the morning of the election. There was no time for it to have any impact on the outcome. And, in fact, the two votes that were challenged, obviously, as this court recognized in Crawford v. Mannion, an individual vote would never practically affect the outcome of a state or federal election.
Well, it might in a town election.
It might, but in this particular case, it was determined after a full board, state board election hearing that there was that it was not a close election and it would not have had an impact. If you have no further questions, I'd like to conclude with the fact that Judge Lozano gave three independent...
Well, let me just go back, because one of the things that counsel really hangs his hat on is the fact that she had certain information before, those two facts that she knew before Election Day, and the fact that she didn't act upon it and waited until the next morning, that somehow shows she was willful, or you want to comment on that?
Well, I think what happened, I think the reasonable inference and what her testimony consistently shows is that Chief Nelson brought this to her attention at a meeting a week before the election, and she said, "Oh, I didn't expect that." So she kind of she didn't know if there was an election violation at that point. She didn't know if they were registered to vote, if they had voted, if they had voted absentee. She didn't know.
So you think that her statement then, that's not a discrepancy between what she said as to her explanation the day of the election?
No,
that's
I think it's consistent.
Argument.
I know. I think that her testimony is consistent, that she didn't know the significance of that, but she was surprised by it, so she took note of it. And then she's the county clerk. She's supervising this entire election. On Election Day, she happens to run into the plaintiff at the polling place, and it prompted her to ask, "How do you like living in Chesterton?" And then his suspicious reply is what prompted her to look further into the matter and talk to Chief Nelson, who was right across the street, and she walked across the street and got the police report, and there it was. I think that's totally reasonable, and I don't think the plaintiff has shown any specific facts that would show intent to disenfranchise plaintiff's votes. And Judge Lozano gave three independent reasons for granting summary judgment in this case. The first reason was that under Bodine, there was no showing that there was a real impact on the election. There was no showing that there was an undermining of the organic processes by which candidates are elected. He further found that there was no evidence of discriminatory intent, thus there was no constitutional violation. And thirdly, he found that the defendants here were entitled to qualified immunity, where the clerk's actions, taking into account the specific information that she had at the time, certainly any reasonable election official would consider Brewer's actions not to be, or challenging of the vote, not to be a violation of plaintiff's constitutional right to vote. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 2 minutes, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. Let me address the issue about the information before the day of the election, because I think it is important. Ms. Brewer says when Mr. Nelson gave her this piece of information, she says, "I didn't expect that." First, I think that implies that Ms. Brewer knew very well who Mr. Kazuzic was. He was the son of the Porter Town Council president. And when she says, "I didn't expect that," that's an indication that this was information that she thought might create a problem with respect to his vote or his registration to vote in the town of Porter. She does nothing with that information, and she could have. She could have easily called the members of the election board on that day instead of the day of the election, when she knew Mr. Kazuzic would be at the polls and could do nothing to challenge, to respond to his challenge at a different polling location. He was working at a different poll from where he was required to vote. And let me also address the sort of floodgates argument. This is not a case where an individual would be held responsible every time a challenge is lodged with respect to a vote. In this particular case, there's evidence of intent to try to manipulate the process to obtain the outcome that the person bringing the challenge intended to bring. Ms. Brewer had this information before the election. She did nothing with it. She could have. She knew that this information that she had received was important from the polling inspector, and she withheld it. That's completely different than from her saying, I didn't know that I should have given this information to the inspector. When she was deposed and asked why she didn't give that information, she didn't give an answer like that. So the sort of unsophisticated challenger answer, I didn't know that I should have done this. She gave an explanation, I had other documentation that supported my challenge. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Before you go, counsel, what was the nature of the problem between Chester and Porter that existed earlier?
There were multiple problems, Your Honor. The one that was getting the most publicity was that Porter had filed a lawsuit against Chesterton with respect to a dispute about annexation. But there were other matters that were going on as well. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.